The Carolina Hurricanes are patiently awaiting their schedule for the Eastern Conference Final. And while we wait for that, Andrew and I sit down with Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play announcer Mike Maniscalco to discuss the playoffs so far and look ahead to the Eastern Conference Final.
You're Locked On Hurricanes, your daily podcast on the Carolina Hurricanes, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey there, Caniacs. I'm your host, Jared Ellis, and I'm joined once again by my co-host, Andrew Schnitker. And today, Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play announcer extraordinaire, Mike Maniscalco. How are you fellas doing this morning?
I'm doing wonderful.
I don't know about extraordinaire, but after that, I'm doing fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, I think all the Caniacs are going to beg to differ on that. But, you know, we're going to dive on into this because, obviously, first and foremost, none of us know when the Eastern Conference Final is going to start.
Correct. So, none of us do. Hopefully, we will know tonight, but none of us know at the recording of this podcast.
Yeah, none of us know at 9:48 a.m., so we're not going to ask about that. But, you know, diving on into this, Mike, you know, the last time you were on, we talked a bit about your history with the Hurricanes. You know, you transitioned from doing the radio pre and post game shows into being the third man of the TV broadcast, the Hulk Hogan, if you will. You know, you're the third man. And now, obviously, you're doing play-by-play for the Hurricanes. And what have you learned over the past few years of doing play-by-play, and what changes have you made as you've grown in that role?
Well, look here, brother. Saying your prayers, eating your vitamins. For me, it's you're constantly learning. So when I get asked, like, what have you learned? For me, it's always constantly evolving. There's something changing, but not to sound snarky about it, it's what I've always known, is if you work hard, you put your best effort into everything that you do, people notice it no matter what the role is. And when a door opens up and somebody invites you to walk through, you take the opportunity to do so. So that's something I think some folks will be on the fence with, well, should I do this? Should I take this job? You know, I want this, and this takes me down a different path. But you never, excuse me, you never close a door. I've been talking a lot lately, the last two rounds of playoffs, so I might get a frog in the throat from time to time. But I've learned you don't close the door. And then, you know, transitioning into this role, there's always the less is more on TV. You don't have to say as much when you're calling a game because everyone can see it. When you are radio only, because we simulcast and move over to the radio side, have to be far more descriptive. But for me, it's constantly evolving and always learning and never taking shortcuts. I mean, this is all stuff everybody knows, but this is, for me, kind of what the tenets of my work ethic were built on. And here we are now. And what I know now is the Carolina Hurricanes. And I knew this 5 years ago, but what I know now, Carolina Hurricanes have a really good hockey team.
Yeah, and you actually answered our next question. It came from Twitter. I know we usually kind of save those to the end, but it really fit in here. Annie Goldman on Twitter had asked, what's the difference between calling games on TV versus radio? And, of course, you know, having to be super more descriptive and all of that. But, you know, I personally enjoy listening to them on the radio because it is so descriptive. And, yeah, makes our job a little bit easier, to be honest.
Well, you know, and what I've, you know, people use a lot of terms for it, like, you know, directional, you're going to say left to right or north to south or things like that. But for me, it's the one thing I love about the radio is you do paint the picture, like you top of the right face off circle, down the left wing boards. I used to say, and I say it a lot, the far boards and the near boards. And then I realized, I'm like, well, people might not understand. It's the far boards to me. So the bench side to the near side, but people get that. And you know, you're constantly tweaking. Like, do I like that? Do I not like that? But the thing about radio that I, like I said, that I truly like, you get to be descriptive. You try to get the call as not as wordy as possible, because you don't want to do that, but you try to get it as close to this is what I'm seeing where all the pieces on the chessboard are. Whereas for television, you just want to accent how big the moment is. You just want to, you're, instead of trying to find the right words on the play that's going on for TV, you're just trying to find the right word on television, whereas I should say the right words for radio. So that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. And again, yeah, you've been, you know, with the Hurricanes for a very long time. And yeah, I know it's been a while. It's, you know, when we were talking back before the season, it kind of like shocked me, like, wow, he's been around you even longer than I realized. And yeah, what makes this group special? That's kind of a cliche question.
No, by the way, cliches are cliches because they're real. There's a point to it. Andrew, you know that. How many times we've been in the locker room and, oh, we got to ask this. As long as you don't ask me how I feel, Jared, we're fine. Unless I'm like sick. Then you can ask me how I feel. But that's the one question that bothers me. That. But for me, the thing about this group is what makes them special, they are never satisfied. And not only that, they don't let the highs judge them and they don't let the lows bother them. This is a team that is single-minded in their focus. It's about winning the Stanley Cup. And that's what it's all about. It wasn't about winning the division. It wasn't about winning a playoff round. It's not about getting to the conference final. This team is driven and motivated. And this could be a bit of a cliche word, but it's what every team strives for, consistency. Mm-hmm. And the fun thing for me, or I should say the easy thing for me in my job, I know what this team is going to do every night because they never come off of how they play. They're going to be tenacious on the forecheck. They're going to do X, Y, and Z is always checked every single night. That's why I think what made game 3 in New Jersey a little bit of a shocker for the fans who watch and cover this team, or the folks who cover this team, that they don't play or they don't have a bad defensive game. They might have an offensive game where it's not there. So that's why game 3 against the Devils kind of shocked some folks. But the next day they get right back to it in practice, and then they put it on the ice and lock up the Devils in game number 4. So I'm giving you a long answer, but it is their consistency and their ability to, you know, they use what I'd like to, and I'm going to steal a really good movie line from a movie I think maybe 5 people have ever seen. They follow the rules of Italian driving. You rip off the rearview mirror because what's behind you is not important. It's what's in front of you.
Well, and I think one of the things that people have marveled about with this group is that the fact that they're doing this without some key guys that they thought they would have for a playoff run, without a Max Pacioretty, without an Andrei Svechnikov, without a Teuvo Teravainen. Do you feel like that mentality and that mindset that you're talking about plays into that as well, that they're just thinking, well, doesn't matter who's here or who's not, this is what we want to do?
Absolutely, Andrew. And I want to say this the right way on Max Pacioretty without it seeming like it's a slight, but they only had him for 5 games. Now, we saw what it could have been if he was fully healthy, because he was starting to get there. I mean, he was scoring goals. He's a big body, net front. I think the power play that people were wringing their hands over would have been much better in the regular season had he been able to stay in the lineup. That is one of those injuries that when it happened, you actually hurt for that person, because the road that it took for him to get back to be around the team. And then you saw it happen. I think we all knew what it was the second it did happen. But the thing for Max Pacioretty, he only had him for 5 games, and it was a good glimpse. But I never, when people are saying, well, they don't have Pacioretty in the lineup, well, they didn't really have him in the lineup. You know, they played how they played before him, and how they played after him was how they played with him, and he was just a good access point. The Svechnikov injury was one, if I want to put this into, you know, a context, they weren't scoring 6 goals a game with him, but you want guys like Andrei Svechnikov in the lineup in the playoffs, because he's a big body and he's so talented, and he wears down the defense by just going in and repeatedly hitting them in the corners and winning those physical battles. That was a loss where I'm like, somewhere down the line, this catches up with his team. And then losing Teuvo Teravainen, and just how skilled he is, and forget what he can do offensively. Defensively, I'm like, replacing a forward like that in the playoffs is difficult to do, because he does kill penalties. He plays on the power play. And then he is out there for big defensive situations for this club. So I'm like, at some point, you're going to think you're running into something where it'll catch up. Then we get into the playoffs. The Islander series kind of goes the way we expect it to go. But then here comes this offensive outburst against the New Jersey Devils. And I think part of it, guys, and I really do believe this, and this is not – I keep going to Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, who just got knocked out last night. That Edmonton room, when they're down two goals, I believe there's – when you have players who are that special, same thing with Toronto. When you have players that special, you're sitting there going – and even maybe as a coaching staff, well, they're going to do something to score and win the game. Matthews will do something. McDavid will do something. Whereas this Canes team, it's to a man, okay, what am I going to do to help us win? Not, I'll let Sebastian go win this game, or I'm going to go let Jordan Staal win this game, or I'm going to go let, even if Andrei Svechnikov was there, we'll let Andrei Svechnikov win this game. The mindset of the team is, what am I going to do to help this team win? And I think that that is the proof in the pudding of Conn Smythe Trophy winner Jordan Martinook on his second round series over the New Jersey Devils, at least garnering some votes. Andrew, I know that you are a respected voter in certain things in this world. Get a Conn Smythe vote and vote for Jordan Martinook if this continues. Thank you.
I will. I'll do my best. I'll see what I can work up there. But you know, going back to some of, you know, your history with the Hurricanes, you've been around some other past groups that, you know, felt special, obviously, you know, like the 2019 team, the 2009, 2006. Are there similarities that you're seeing with this group to some of those other groups in the past that have done really special things for this team?
The full disclosure, I was not here in 2006 when the team won the cup. I got here.
Okay.
They won the cup in 06. Then the next year they missed. I got here the year after that. But for the teams I've been around, 19 was, I think you could see things building, but that playoff run was just a special group of players who'd come together. And when people ask me nationally about, you know, how have the Hurricanes gotten here, it starts and ends with one guy, Rod Brind'Amour, and what he has instilled in this team, the way that they play a system. And when he talks about it, you know, everybody knows what everybody's doing, but to get your players, going back to the consistency talked about a little bit earlier, to do that every night, starts with him. That was a special group, and you could just kind of see as they got into the playoffs, all right, this is what Justin Williams brings to the table. And, you know, that was a fun group to cover, but I don't think anybody saw them making a run to the conference final. The group for me where you're thinking, okay, there's something that can be really special here, maybe they can get the job done, was that Central Division winning team in the 56-game schedule. They finish in front of Tampa in Nashville in that division that year. They win the Central Division, and you're sitting here going, this could be it. And you kind of start picking up on, everybody knows their role. Everybody knows what they're supposed to do. This is how four lines are going to roll. This team has all of that. And the 09 team, the furious rally that they put on to get into the playoffs, you could sense that people were selling them short in 09 once they got in, because, oh, they're not going to beat New Jersey. Oh, they're not going to beat Boston. And they, by the time they got to Pittsburgh, you know, two game sevens and overtimes in game seven in Boston, and, you know, how they won at Jersey. At some point you do get, I think, just exhausted physically and mentally from the playoffs. And that Pittsburgh team was pretty darn good too, for those of us who remember 09. But, like, they were a good team that run to get in there. And that kind of scares me about teams that have to make a run in the playoffs. I mean, we saw it with the St. Louis Blues, who were – they woke up the morning of January 3rd, the year they won the Cup, and they were dead last. Not in the bottom of the division. They were dead last in the NHL and go on a run. But this group, they know how to win now. So it goes back to – I don't want to be repetitive. It just ties everything together. Andrew, the fact that this group has all of those things where I thought was special, but now they have this attitude of, we're not just happy to be in the playoffs, or we think we can win the cup. It's a different attitude around this team, and they are a good group to be around because you have a really good mix of players. And when you get a team to understand it's not one guy, it's not about your stat, it's we need to do this, you get to see what this Hurricanes team is doing in the playoffs.
And we will continue to talk to Mike Maniscalco about the Carolina Hurricanes and what they're doing in the playoffs right after this quick break. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. We streamline hiring with powerful tools that help find you matched candidates. With Instant Match, over 80% of employers get quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job, according to Indeed data in the U.S. Even better, Indeed's the only job site where you only pay for the applications that meet your must-have requirements. Indeed is an unbelievably powerful hiring platform, delivering 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined, according to TalentNest in 2019. So join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Starting now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/LockedOn. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/LockedOn. Indeed.com/LockedOn. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Now, diving back into the Carolina Hurricanes, you know, we've been talking about how this team feels special. A lot of folks, you know, felt that, you know, the cup was going to Boston. It was Boston's cup to lose. They were so good. I mean, not taking away from what they did in the regular season. They had a historic regular season, but you know, now it feels like, you know, this team has a legitimate shot. Like, you know, the big dog, you know, that everyone was looking at is not here anymore. And you're talking about, you know, 09. And, you know, I have rally towels, you know, from that playoff boxed up. And, you know, question we had here, you know, for you, you kind of already answered for us, was what does this team have that last year's didn't?
And I think for me, one, when you look at, and I think you go how they're built, how they're constructed, there is how they play. They have more speed in positions where maybe they didn't have it in years past. And, and I'm going to point to the third defensive pairing right now of Dalen Chatfield and Shane Gostisbehere. And this game is a fast game now. Now I'm a bit of a dinosaur. I still think that there is room for the heavy hitter, the guy who is not an intimidator anymore, but a guy who can clear out the front of the net. Like I am a big fan of Brendan Smith and the professional that he is, who signed with New Jersey this offseason. I always have, and this is, you know, the old school, how we used to do it. I always have like I'll have a space in my heart for defensemen like that, you know, the old schoolers. But the speed of this team, and when I go down the list of speed of this team, it's not just, oh, how fast Marty Natchez and Sebastian Aho are and all that. It is the way this team plays, they can all recover. And you see it anytime there is a break, you've got somebody hustling back down the ice, trying to make a back check. It could be a forward to break it up, or you get a defenseman jumping in offensively. Brent Burns is a big thing to add. And not just, you know, to single out one player, but my goodness, was there a better fit for a player to go to a team this offseason via trade, the way he got to Carolina, or free agent signing? I don't know if there was a better fit for a player to change a venue than Burns going to Carolina. And when he really got to the point where he wasn't thinking about where he needed to be defensively, and I give him full slack on that, because if you guys have driven to work the same route for 11 years, and then you now all of a sudden have to take a different route to work, or you're going to a different job, you're still in your mind going to do the same things. When he got that, and it only took him about a month, he'll tell you it took him longer, but if you watch around November, he was completely comfortable in the system. But those are the things you watch him play and the impact that he has. And again, just the penalty kill for this team is phenomenal. And this is a penalty kill that at the start of the year was having a little bit of issues because there are no secrets anymore. And they decided to make tweaks and changes. And that's a commitment. A coaching staff has to say, we need to do this. Very much like Ted Lasso. They've decided to run the, you know, football, the version of the triangle offense. They did it. And they made these little changes that I don't know for, you know, us, when we watch it, we can truly notice all the differences. But when to pressure, they were always a pressure PK, but when to pressure and what point to really focus on. And I mean, I can, Jared, this is a great question because I think I could go on for about 20 more minutes for what this team's done, like for individual things this year. But what it all comes back to is guys who now have played with this team. It's a group that's been together for a while, but the ads like Brent Burns, Paul Stastny in the playoffs, where you get a veteran who has been there and, you know, wants to win, but knows the moment, but he accepted his role. I mean, it's hard when you've been a guy who was the guy for the majority of your career, and there are going to be nights when he wasn't going to play, and then just making the right adjustments at the right time for this team. But for me, I just, how this team is constructed, the speed of this team, it's different, and you can watch it night in, night out. When they are on their game, the opposition can't do anything against them. They can't take them off pucks. They don't win board battles. They don't get any sustained offensive zone time. They are a beast. They were – it's funny you mentioned Boston. What, Stephen King's got a new movie out, The Boogeyman? You know, the Canes were not afraid of the Boogeyman. You know, that was – they knew that if you had to go through them, you go through them. But that's also a different answer to a question not asked. But that's what makes the NHL playoffs so great.
Mm-hmm.
Boogeyman can be pushed back into the closet and locked away. And that's what happened. And now you got to worry about it because look at who the Hurricanes are playing. The team that beat this big, bad Bruins team that was going to be unbeatable in the playoffs.
Yeah. And yeah, we can, you know, just dive on into that one there. Yeah. We'll skip ahead on our question list a little bit. The Panthers have a lot of ex-Hurricanes on their team, in their coaching staff. What are your thoughts on those Panthers ex-Hurricane connections?
I think it's great for us. To be honest, and Andrew, how many times? And Andrew and Jared, if you don't know, Andrew and I have had many a conversation in the locker room asking players the exact same questions. Good times. But I think that it's a bigger deal for us than it is for them. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Staal and Paul Maurice would love to beat this team. It would taste a little bit sweeter than just, you know, say knocking out the New York Islanders if you're the Florida Panthers. But I think in the grand scheme, it's talking points for us. And when the puck is dropped, the uniform and anything that's there, like I said, that's for us to talk about. For them, it's just trying to win a game. But I think it's afterwards, it'll be sweet. But I think during the moment, there's never this thought of, oh, you know, sometimes you'll get it. But for Eric, I mean, how much water is under that bridge? You know, it's like he played a lifetime in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And now he's here. And for Paul Maurice, what this is for Paul, after the second stint with the Carolina Hurricanes, this is his third head coaching job, you know, Toronto, Winnipeg, and now with Florida with a stop in the KHL. So I think it's great for us because it gives us brother versus brother storyline. Mm-hmm. You know, the former coach coming back and, you know, the front office, Paul Kropelka, the assistant GM and Rick Dudley, who, you know, those guys were responsible for signing players or advocating for free agent signings or draft picks or things like that. So it's great. And it's a fun aside, but I think once the puck drops, I don't think Eric's sitting there going, oh, I'm going to chill you for trading me to the Rangers back. No, I think that's all gone.
It's going to make for the holidays to be a bit odd.
I think they're awkward no matter what. I think they were awkward in 09 when Jordan was playing for Pittsburgh.
Mike, my photo editor emeritus at Kane's Country, Jamie Kellner, would never forgive me if I didn't point out the Tuomo Ruutu erasure that you just committed. But
I was saving a whole 5 minutes for Tuomo Ruutu for himself, which I still firmly believe, Andrew. If we as a society lived life the way that Tuomo Ruutu does, this would be utopia. He is one of the best people I've ever been around.
I could see that. But, you know, going back, you know, we've talked a lot about the ex-Hurricane connections, but there's more to break down, a lot more to break down with this Panthers team than that. When you look at what they did, you know, coming back from 3-1 against Boston, what they just did to, I mean, we look, we all know the jokes, the stories, everything about the Leafs in the playoffs, but what they just did to a good Leafs team. Feels like this is a really, you know, a Panthers team that kind of underachieved all year. They won the President's Trophy a year before, you know, got a lot of talent, especially up front. What are some of the challenges that this Panthers team you feel like is going to present for the Hurricanes?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because everybody seemed to forget how good the Panthers were last year. You know, the President's Trophy winners. And then they looked, and this is a hard thing to do. They looked at what they had and said that wasn't good enough. And what did they need? And they go and add Matthew Tkachuk from Calgary in that blockbuster deal, dealing Jonathan Huberdeau, who'd been a huge cornerstone of that Panther team, and Mackenzie Weegar, who had really come out of nowhere. You know, this was, I think Weegar was a fourth round draft pick who now all of a sudden is this guy who they're like, oh, we got a defenseman who can put up these numbers and play the system. And they go and make that trade. They let Andrew Brunette go, who was the interim head coach. And then they bring in Paul Maurice. And for me, the challenges are what you said, what they have up front. I think they have, we in Carolina talk about Jacob Slavin not being talked about in the superstar, or Sebastian Aho not talked enough in the superstar realm. How many people talk about Alexander Barkov in those words? I mean, he is just a dynamite player. And then you add Matthew Tkachuk, who is an irritant. He's going to do something in this series that's going to get under somebody's skin. And he's going to score a goal in this series. I hope not, but like that's the kind of player he is. The funny thing is, if you look at Florida, I think that there was so much shock with the change that was made in the offseason. There is going to be an adjustment period. You know, they're not going to play the system the way that Paul Maurice wants them to play early on. Matthew Tkachuk has to adjust, although, you know, if you're a Hart Trophy finalist, I don't think the learning curve was that long for Matthew. But the other players have to change. The culture in the room changes because you took out two guys who've been there for a while. These are all things you have to consider. And I think if you look right around mid-January, this team, it all fell into place. And when I say it all fell into place, they had to fight to get into the playoffs. But they became a little bit better defensively. You know, I think getting Anthony Duclair back and adding him in, and you can slot when you get injured players or when you get certain players back in the lineup and you can slot guys where they're supposed to be, that's big. Carter Verhaeghe, who has really turned into an excellent NHL player, is hard to play against. I mean, they have players who are difficult. And then Brandon Montour, who, you know, he wears 62, 6 minus 2 is 4. He turned into Bobby Orr in that first round of the series against the Boston Bruins. A little bit quieter against the Maple Leafs, but they're big. They can hit. They have players who can get under your skin. They are a tough, tough team. And I think that when they put the pieces of the puzzle together, they went, oh, okay, this is what we have to do defensively. And they have Sergei Bobrovsky. And if you have good Sergei Bobrovsky, he's going to win a game. He won game two in Toronto. But then there's bad Sergei Bobrovsky, who makes an appearance from time to time. And if you get him on the right path, you can get under his helmet and into his head and affect him a little bit. We've seen that in the past, but the way he's playing right now, it's going to be a tough order. It just really, truly is. And like I said, you called me 8th seed, Jared, and they are. And they were, I think, statistically the last team to get in. I think they were the 17th ranked team in the NHL, right, guys? If you went just straight one through 32 numbers. But this is not your typical 8th seed that we've seen in years past get in. This is a good hockey club, and they've got a ton of pieces that if you're the Canes, and this is more for the fans because I know the team's not like this. Don't sit here and say, oh, this is the 8th seed. This is a different animal from 8 seeds that you'd see in the playoffs.
Yeah, we've said it time and time again. Team gets in the playoffs, they have a shot. They got hot at the right time.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing that, you know, a lot of hockey traditionalists are going on about right now
is
the non-traditional markets in the conference final. Oh. We obviously have an all Southeast division, Eastern Conference final with Carolina and Florida, and then of course the Central Division too. But long live the Southeast Division, RIP Atlanta. And now we also have Vegas in the West, now as well, with potentially Dallas as well.
Or Seattle. What are your thoughts on Seattle, a second-year team?
Yeah, that too. That too. What are your thoughts about all this non-traditional hockey market stuff that these traditionalists are saying?
I love it because it's such an arrogant position that these people take. Mm-hmm. It's a hockey market. There's a hockey team here. I don't care that it's North Carolina or it's, I would love to tell you South Beach, but Andrew, I don't know if either of you have been to FLA Live Arena. It's not on South Beach. They paved over a swamp and that's where it is in Sunrise. But I don't care if it's there or Dallas or Anaheim. I just so hate this elitist, enjoy your fun little hockey. No, it's hockey. Like, if Winnipeg was in, would Canada be talking about how this is a terrible small market and how dare we get it? If Winnipeg makes it to the Stanley Cup final, you should celebrate it, because here's a city that loves hockey. They're passionate about it. But Winnipeg is I don't even know what I could put it to. Memphis, maybe? I don't even know. No, Memphis is a bigger city than everything's a bigger city than Winnipeg. But, and I'm not, I hate that I'm dumping on Winnipeg, but nobody in Canada would be pissed if the Winnipeg Jets were playing for the Stanley Cup. They talk about, this is how it was meant to be. So just drop that. All right. Let's just drop all this. And then I also love I hope you're happy that you get your non-traditional hockey market conference final. And Toronto gets pissed or Boston's mad or whoever's mad. I'm like, why are you mad about this? Oh, they set this up. Oh, yes. If we're talking about this, I'm going to pull back a curtain here, Jared, Andrew. If leagues had their way, the teams with the biggest TV markets would play for the championship every year because they want the biggest ratings they can possibly get. And I hate and then there are people here who will sit there and complain, we're tired of Boston and New York. And then when you get Florida, Carolina, this is what's wrong. Well, no, this is what's right. This is what grows the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want Raleigh, North Carolina, and you want Miami, and Miami, by the way, is, I know that's where the Panthers are tied to. That's the city they're tethered to. That's a pretty damn big market. And you want the sport to be big there. You really do. I've never understood this traditionalist versus non-traditional thing. It's been 25 years for the Hurricanes living in the state of North Carolina. Not 25 seasons, because the league's done a couple of things, but 25 years. This is a traditional hockey market. Now, it's a quarter of a century. And you guys see it when you go to the parking lot, when you go to a playoff game, when you in this year, 32 sellouts in the regular season. It's huge, huge for an area like this. You know, I like to remind people that Chicago, before they went on the run with Taves and Kane, they were getting like 5,000 people a night, 6,000 people. There's a traditional hockey market. It's they should absolutely stand up and applaud. Toronto and Montreal and all these cities should stand up and applaud and say, this is good for the game, because now more people are going to be interested in our game. And sometimes that's the problem I get with hockey. They want to keep this little closed circuit television thing, and it's just for us and you guys can't have it. Stuff it. I think this is the best thing that could happen. I really, truly do. And if you want to tell me that Vegas, when they got into the league 6 years ago, that wasn't an awesome story, and their run that they went on, what's going on in Seattle? Seattle is going nuts for hockey. Now, they have had hockey in 1919, and then the flu broke out and canceled everything. But this, to me, I love it, and I'm for it. And I know I look like I've had the same haircut for 47 years, so I don't look like an anarchist, but I am for the chaos theory on things. I am all for this. And anytime that we can get these non-traditional – and I just want to – I want to stop using that term. Anytime we get these hockey markets in, it's good for the sport.
Yeah, I think we all love it. I saw last night with Edmonton getting knocked out. A Canadian team hasn't won the Cup since 93, since before me or Andrew were even alive.
Oh, God.
And, and I remember, I forget who I was talking about it with, but, just going back, over the past, since the turn of millennium, all the, Southern market teams that have won the Cup, you got Tampa winning multiple, you got Dallas, I believe, was right there. You had us, you had Anaheim, LA, then San Jose going on their run to it, Vegas going on their run, like
Nashville.
Nashville as well. And you're like, it can clearly succeed here and be good, not just be it's there and just existing. Like, it can be good. It kind of makes me go miss the Thrashers and what could have been. It's like they left a couple years too early.
But I'm glad you brought that up. And you know, I know I was it felt like I was ragging on Winnipeg, and I really wasn't meaning to do that. I was trying to say if Winnipeg gets in, nobody in Canada is gonna complain. Edmonton is I'm trying to think what they are, like population wise in concert with the United States. Like if there's a comp, and forgive me for not having this pulled. And if one of you guys can, as I rant here, go right ahead. And thanks for hitting the hot button for me too, Jared. I am passionate about this because I just want the sport. I want people to like it. But if you got it, go ahead.
Edmonton has a population in 2017 of 981,280 people.
So comparable what here to the Triangle, to Raleigh? We probably have
probably
more.
Roughly the Triangle as a whole.
Nobody in Canada is talking about, you know, it's a shame that a small market Edmonton team was one win away from the conference final.
Mm-hmm. And know, Winnipeg has a population in 2017 of just under 750,000.
Yeah. And so again, it goes to, for me, it goes to that point and what could have been of the Southeast Division, as you mentioned with the Thrashers, but it really, for me, just boils down to, good hockey is good hockey. I don't care what city it's from. Again, conspiracy theorists, tinfoil hat wearers have their, you know, it's always funny. The refs are out to get us or the league's out to get us. And it usually happens when your team loses. But for me, I will just, again, go back to good hockey is good hockey. I want to see Connor McDavid play. I don't care if he's playing for Edmonton or if he's playing for Anchorage. Or you know, playing for the Rangers, and that's what hockey fans should do instead of complaining about this stuff. And I'm not pointing the finger or wagging it at people, but you know, good hockey fans want to watch Sebastian Aho and Jacob Slavin play. You want to watch Alexander Barkov and Matthew Tkachuk. You want to watch Jason Robertson and what the Dallas Stars have going on, and Wyatt Johnson. What a good young team they have, and what they built. This Seattle story, Matty Beniers is fantastic, you know, out of Michigan, a year out of Michigan. And, you know, these are the things for me that I just love this time of year, but I do hate that this becomes a conversation or a talking point for folks when big markets get knocked out. Let's celebrate that this is a sport where you can have a team anywhere in North America and have a chance of winning it.
Yeah, and we will continue to talk about the Eastern Conference Final, give our predictions on that, as well as talk about Rod Brindamore's first 5 years as head coach right after this quick break, folks. Looking for a delicious snack and don't want all the sugar and calories? Then you need the best tasting protein bar ever, and that is Built Bar. If you're like me and you want a healthier snack, but you don't want to compromise on taste, I've got just the thing for you. Built Bars and Built Puffs are healthy and taste amazing. And a lot of you folks that have been around for a long time, you know all about Built Bars because they've been a sponsor of the show since just about day one. But if you're new here for the playoffs, you got to be asking yourself, what makes Built Bars taste so good? And that is because, for starters, they are covered in 100% real dark chocolate, and they come in unbelievable flavors like churro, cookies and cream, and my personal favorite, peanut butter brownie. And they are also extremely healthy, as they only have 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and a whopping 17 grams of protein. And if you want some Built Bars right now, you can go to your local Walmart or Sam's Club, where you can get some specialty flavors there. At Walmart, you can get a 4-bar box of cookies and cream and double chocolate or coconut puff. And if you have a Sam's Club membership, you can get a 13-bar box of brownie batter and churro puff. That's one I would go with. And if none of those tickle your fancy, you can go online to built.com, where they have a bunch of different flavors. They have something for everyone. So go get you some Built Bars today. Now, like I said, we're in year 5 of Rod Brindamore's head coaching tenure. We talked about this on the day of the anniversary last week. Now, we want to ask you, Mike, you know, because we are in year five, what has made him such a great leader in two different roles for this franchise?
Well, Built Bars, I'm going to go with that. As a guest of the show, do I get the 13-bar box, and do I have to share it with Rod if that's the case? There you go, plug for the sponsor.